Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On January 22nd, District Attorney charged three former fundraisers for San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee with bribery and money laundering in exchange for political access. The three operatives are recently retired Human Rights Commission employee Zula Jones, former HRC Commissioner Nazli Mohajer, and former political consultant Keith Jackson. They're charged with soliciting and accepting $20,000 in bribes from an undercover FBI agent in exchange for political access and preferential treatment in connection with city contracts. Last year, Jackson pleaded guilty to racketeering charges. He's also been charged with grand theft and managing a straw donor scheme. The charges stem from a five-year-old federal investigation of Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow. On January 8th, Chow was found guilty on all 162 counts, including racketeering and murder. For many years, San Francisco politicians praised Chow as a former criminal who turned his life around. That investigation also implicated a number of officials, including former California Senator Leland Yee. He admitted to taking bribes from undercover FBI agents, arranging meetings for donors, and illegally smuggling guns from the Philippines. He faces years in federal prison. Mayor Ed Lee was not available to join us today. San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee has denied any wrongdoing. There is no evidence that he did anything illegal. His Director of Communications, Christine Falvey, sent the following statement. In both 2011 and in 2015, Mayor Lee and his campaign conducted themselves according to the highest ethical standards, thoroughly vetting each campaign contribution based on all available information to ensure it fully complies with the law. The Ethics Commission even conducted a comprehensive audit of a campaign's finances and determined there was full compliance. So joining me to talk about this unfolding case, there are many layers to this, is Tim Redman. He's founder and editor of 48 Hills, an online progressive daily providing original reporting about San Francisco. Tim is former editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian. He's been covering this case, and he joins me in studio. Hi, Tim. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Always happy to be on your show.
It's great to have you. So there are so many layers to this, and it's kind of complicated. But at the end of the day, the big question is really who has access at City Hall, right?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the reasons this is so complicated, and these cases always get so complicated, is that fine line between what we might call corruption, what is legal, what is illegal, and what is simply influence. And I mean, it's no secret. It is no secret that people who give large amounts of money to politicians have influence. That is how our messed up system works.
Right.
And, you know, there's no question that one of the things that you buy when you give a lot of money to a politician is access, right? You know, the mayor... Mayor Ed Lee is a busy guy, right? It's hard. I can't just call up the phone and get the mayor on the phone, right? Neither can you, and neither can most people, right? Most constituents can't just pick up the phone and call and have Ed Lee answer and say, hello, what can I do for you, right? That's understandable. He runs a city of almost 800,000 people, right? He can't possibly talk to everyone. So who gets that phone call answered? Who gets that call returned? Well, if you've raised $50,000 for the mayor, the odds that he would decline to return your phone call are pretty slim. Mm-hmm. You get your phone call answered. And we all know that. Nor is that, by the way, illegal. It is not illegal for someone to give money to a politician and have extra access to that person. That is why corporations give money to politicians. That's why lobbyists give money to politicians, because they want that phone call return. They want to answer. That's perfectly legal. But at a certain point, you start getting into that fine area where it's at very least sleazy and at times illegal. And what went on in this case that makes this case a legal case and that involves criminal charges is that there was what they're kindly calling money laundering going on. Now, of course, let me just step back for a second. We don't know all the details in this case. This case was filed under a federal gag order, which does not have the defense lawyers happy. But the district attorney, George Gascon, says he can't release all the details. And by the way, if he did, it might besmirch the reputations of innocent people, right? What does that mean? Who are those people? I don't know. What we do know is this. We do know that the defendants in this case approached or were approached by an FBI agent who went by the name of Mr. King, and they arranged to take $20,000 in money from him, including checks made out essentially to themselves, right? And then they broke that up into smaller amounts with different donors and gave it to Ed Lee's campaign. That's against the law. You can only give $500 to a politician running for office in San Francisco. I can give $500. You can give $500. But what we can't do is we can't go out and find somebody to give me a check for $10,000 and then have all of my friends write a $500 check and reimburse them. That's illegal. That's what was alleged to go on here.
And so the money that they were raising for Ed Lee was for his 2011 campaign debt?
Yes, for his 2011 campaign debt. And, you know, it is often the case that when people get elected to office in the last crazy weeks of the campaign, that they spend more money than they actually have. And it's typical afterwards, particularly it's easier for the person who wins, then goes out and does fundraisers to retire the campaign debt. And again, that's perfectly legal. What's not legal is for these folks to be taking that money and essentially laundering it through others to give the money to the mayor. Now, the mayor will say, and has said repeatedly, that he had no idea that this was going on. He had no idea that anything illegal was happening, that he raised an awful lot of money. A lot of people gave him $500. It's impossible, and I would agree with this, it is impossible in the course of a campaign where you have hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of donors, to know every one of them, to check every one of them, to make sure that every one of them isn't doing something kind of sleazy, right? But here's where it gets tricky. At one point, the mayor had a meeting with Mr. King, right, the undercover FBI agent. Why and how did that happen? That's the question that I think is so interesting. Is it's not as if any person who wants to do business in San Francisco gets to have a private meeting with the mayor. Right? Was it the case, and we don't know, we won't know probably till the trial, was it the case that, for example, Zula Jones, who knew Ed Lee very well, she worked for him, she worked for him at the Human Rights Commission. When she retired, he gave her an award. He was at her retirement dinner. Right? Is it possible that she called up and said to him, Mr. Mayor, this is a guy who has given us $20,000, who has raised $20,000 for us. You should meet with him. And then they held that meeting, in which case, did he know that that money had been laundered, or did he just think, oh, this is a guy who went out and held a fundraiser and raised a lot of money for me, which would have been perfectly legal.
Hmm.
All right. So this is where it starts to get dicey, and this is where the questions come into play. And then the larger question from that is, how often does this happen? How often do the people who give or raise the large amounts of money get to have private meetings with the mayor? And at some point, this becomes – I mean, on one level, it's perfectly legal. On another level, it starts to make the rest of us feel like we don't have any say in what goes on at City Hall. But if you raise a lot of money for the mayor, you do.
Why did Ed Lee have a hard time paying off his campaign debt in the first place?
He didn't have a hard time paying off his campaign debt. He was able to raise that money, and he should have been able to raise that money without any of this nonsense going on, because he was the incumbent mayor. He had won. And honestly, when you've won an election and you're mayor of San Francisco, everyone wants your ear. Everyone wants to give you $500 because that's how they're going to get their phone calls returned. Honestly, none of this was necessary. He would have been able to raise that money without any problem without this happening. So again, what was going on here? Now, some people say that Zula Jones has a long history of talking about her own importance, her own self-importance, her own clout. Maybe she convinced the FBI that she was connected to the mayor. Maybe Ed Lee knew nothing about this. Maybe she was trying to, you know, get Ed Lee to look kindly on her. Who knows what was actually going on?
And for many listeners, this is maybe the first time they've heard of these people. So you write that Zula Jones worked for the Human Rights Commission. She described herself as a protege of Willie Brown and Ed Lee. And when she retired from her $120,000 a year job, that's when Ed Lee gave her an award.
Right. And I talked to the mayor about this. I actually cornered him at City Hall and said, Mr. Mayor, you worked with Zula Jones for a long time. She was raising money for your campaign. Did you ever have any questions about her ethics and about whether this was appropriate? And he kind of went around in circles, as the mayor does. And he said that he only knew her as a city employee, and that he never did anything unethical in his campaign, and he went back to basically the statement that his press secretary has been putting out, that this campaign was run to the highest ethical standards. Again, I'm going to be fair here. Maybe he didn't know. Right? There's so much money that's involved, and what that's one of the problems here, of course, Rose, on a larger level, is how much money is involved in American politics these days, how much money you have to raise to run for office. And, you know, all this money coming in, maybe he didn't know that any of it was questionable. But that comes back to then, in that case, why did he meet with this guy who he had never heard of before, who turned out to be an undercover FBI agent?
So why did the FBI get involved in this to begin with?
Well, the FBI, it's a very good question, and everybody's kind of wondering what was the spark for this. The FBI was definitely investigating Raymond Shrimpoy Chow,
okay,
and they were investigating him for a wide range of different things. Now, in the process of that, as we see, a lot of local political figures got roped in. In the course of that investigation, we don't know for sure exactly how this happened, but they learned that State Senator Leland Yee, who was then running for Secretary of State, was involved in some crazy campaign finance stuff. And again, it was the same kind of thing. It was somebody saying, I'll raise $20,000 for you if I can get something in exchange. Now, in this case, there were some more specifics. They wanted a bill introduced. They wanted access to something. They wanted something specific, right? There's no evidence that Mayor Ed Lee ever said to the FBI agent, if you raise $20,000 for me, I'll give you a meeting. There's no evidence of that. There is evidence that Leland Yee was doing that, right? More directly. And then we get into the weird gun running thing.
Right.
Which still has my head spin. This is a guy who was a champion of gun control in Sacramento. And this was something that came, I mean, there have been rumors, as there are about many politicians, that Senator Yee did favors for campaign contributors. That's been going on. That's been rumored for years. But this whole idea of the gun running is just weird.
He admitted to illegally smuggling guns from the Philippines.
Yeah, which is I mean, where did that come from? But anyway, once the FBI started going down that trail, they got into what is now becoming perhaps a pattern of political corruption in San Francisco. And the interesting question here in everyone's mind is, what's next? When they had the press conference announcing these charges, I asked District Attorney Gascon, who has been working with the FBI and with City Attorney Dennis Herrera. Now everybody's getting involved in this. And I said, are there going to be more charges? Is what's next? And all the district attorney would say is, this is an ongoing investigation. In other words, from their perspective, it doesn't end. The case has not closed since they've caught these three people. So I don't know what that means. It does mean that they have reason to believe that there may be more in terms of corruption at City Hall.
Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills, an online progressive daily, providing original reporting about San Francisco. Tim is former editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian, a longtime San Francisco political reporter. And today we're talking about these charges filed against three former fundraisers for San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee. They have been charged with bribery and money laundering in exchange for political access. They are charged with accepting $20,000 in bribes from an undercover FBI agent in exchange for political access and preferential treatment in connection with city contracts. We'll talk about those later in the show. The charges stem from a 5-year-old federal investigation of Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow. He was found guilty on January 8th. On 162 counts, including racketeering and murder. For years, politicians in the city praised Chow as a former criminal who turned his life around. So there are many layers to this. We wanted to do a show to figure out what is actually happening here, following the money. And Tim says at the end of the day, the main question that comes up from all of this is, who has access at City Hall? And if you have any questions about these cases, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. If you work with city government or you have connections with city government and you'd like to talk about corruption and the influence of money in politics, give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. All right, so to make sure that we don't lose people, let's talk about Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow.
Yes.
Who is this guy? Because, as I said, politicians have praised him as a former criminal who turned his life around.
That's what he was saying. And he has maintained all along his innocence. The FBI aggressively investigated him. And part of his defense was that the FBI was essentially forcing money on him, that he wasn't taking bribes, he wasn't promising anything, but FBI agents just kept throwing money at him, and after a while he started taking it. But he wasn't giving them anything in exchange. That's his defense. Now, there have been allegations for many years that he was involved in a murder of his predecessor at the political cultural club, the Tong, that he controlled, and there were that he had murdered the former head. No one ever charged him with this for years. It had been talked about. The local police investigated. They did not file any charges against him. And yeah, people said, look, this is an ex-con who is working with youth, who's trying to keep kids out of trouble, who has, you know, become, has turned his life around and become a good guy. Now, the FBI says is during that entire period, of course, he was continuing essentially gangland activities. And the interesting thing about this trial is that the judge, Judge Breyer, didn't allow a lot of what the defense wanted to say into court. He was very, very strict about what he would allow into court, and he wanted to focus just on the very specifics of these charges. And what the defense wanted to do was interrogate the undercover FBI agents and say, weren't you entrapping him? Weren't you forcing him to do this? They also wanted to bring in the mayor, and they wanted to bring in other people from City Hall and say, wait a minute, the FBI is investigating all this corruption at City Hall, and why did they pick on my one guy? The judge wouldn't go for any of that. So obviously, some of these charges will be appealed, and there may be some questions that come up about whether this was appropriate. Hard to imagine, though, how Shrimp Boy is going to do anything other than spend the rest of his life in prison.
Hmm. Well, and it also, again, the question is, why did the FBI spend so many resources and time on this? Because they spent 3 years secretly recording conversations. Undercover agents led by Dave Jordan posed as an East Coast businessman with mob ties and as a admirer of Chow, or as the Chronicle calls it, a devoted admirer of Chow. I mean, they put a lot of resources into this case.
They put a lot of resources into this case. And that, again, is a good question. Why did they go into this case? And was it only Shrimp Boy that got them interested? Or did they have reason to believe that this was also a political corruption case? Were they looking at Li Linyi and got into Shrimp Boy? Were they looking at Shrimp Boy and got into Li Linyi? We don't know the details of this. The FBI, as you know, Rose, doesn't talk about this kind of stuff. It's very, very hard to get information out of the FBI. And someday, at some point, we'll find that out, but we don't really know. We do know, you're right, it was a tremendous amount of political and economic resources that were put into this case.
And so Chow will be sentenced on March 23rd. He faces a mandatory life term in prison for murder. And then going to California Senator Li Linyi, former Secretary of State, who ran against Mayor Ed Lee. He admitted to taking bribes from undercover FBI agents. He admitted to arranging meetings for donors. And we talked about this, illegally smuggling guns from the Philippines. What strikes you about this?
Well, again, one of the things that strikes me is that I don't think Li Linyi is the only one in Sacramento who does this. I think actually the idea of arranging meetings and arranging favors for campaign donors is relatively common in Sacramento. It's common in San Francisco. It's common in most of America today, and that's the corrupting influence of money in politics. The difference here is, again, if I decide that I think Li Linyi is a great state senator and I agree with all of his politics and I'm going to write him a check for $5,000 because he's a hell of a guy. And it just so happens that he also thinks that I'm a very important constituent. And when I call him up and ask him about something, he takes the phone call. And when I suggest that he introduces a bill to solve some problem in my neighborhood, he says, yeah, that's a really good idea. That happens all the time. There's nothing illegal about that. What's illegal is when it's a quid pro quo, when it's specifically tied, when I basically say to him, if you'll introduce this bill to help my company, I'll raise $50,000 for you. Okay? That's against the law. And is Li Linyi the only one in Sacramento doing this? No, of course not. Of course not. The gun running, as I say, just is bizarre. Leland is not a young man. I don't know what his sentence is going to be, but he's going to, you know, most likely spend a significant part of the rest of his life in prison. Now, the other interesting question that comes out about all of this that everybody's talking about at City Hall is, We've got people who are facing long terms in prison, not just Leland Yee, but Zula Jones, right? Keith Jackson. What happens if one of these folks says, I don't want to spend 7 years in jail, but I know other people right. who are involved? What happens if somebody, you know, rolls? If, and that's very common. I mean, that's how law enforcement works, right? With drug dealers, you get the little guy in the street and then you say, if you give me your dealer, I won't send you to jail. And then you go to the dealer and say, you're facing 10 years. We'll give you two if you turn in Mr. Big. So is there more to this? Number one, first question, are there other players at City Hall who are involved in political corruption? Does Zula Jones know anything about them? And would she talk in exchange for a reduced sentence? Is that going to happen? Again, this is all speculation at this point, but that is how these investigations tend to work. And if there are more people involved, it is possible that the FBI and the district attorney charged to, frankly, relatively low level, the HRC, two relatively low level campaign aides. Well, they weren't even campaign aides. They were out raising money for the mayor at a fairly low level. They were not part of his campaign. They were not his employees in his campaign. Why did the FBI go after them? Maybe because they're looking for bigger fish.
Hmm. And I want to correct myself. I think I said Leland Yee was former Secretary of State.
No, he was running for Secretary of State.
He was running. Thank you. Yeah. And also, according to the Chronicle, so Leland Yee acknowledged that in exchange for contributions, he arranged a meeting between a donor and another senator to discuss marijuana legislation. He agreed to recommend another donor's software company for a state contract. Mm-hmm. He promised to vote for legislation restricting California workers' compensation payments to injured National Football League players, you know, just to let people know that this is what goes on.
This is what goes on in Sacramento. And, you know, the tragedy of all of this, the thing that really makes me crazy, and a lot of people will just say, oh, all politics is corrupt. And so what? We all know the system is rigged against us. You know, Bernie Sanders is saying that on the campaign trail, the system is rigged against us. The frustrating thing when this kind of stuff happens in San Francisco or in the state of California is it really undermines people's faith in government. And the problem with that is we're in an era right now when the Koch brothers – there's a new book out about this. The Koch brothers have spent billions of dollars trying to undermine people's faith in government and trying to convince people that government is a bad thing, that as Ronald Reagan said, government is the problem. The government is not the solution. Government is the problem. Well, when that happens, it's hard to get people to say, well, we ought to raise taxes and spend that money on good social programs. We ought to be spending more money to help homeless people. We ought to be asking wealthy people to pay more taxes. Then they just turn around and say, if I pay my taxes, you know, someone with more money than me is going to get a bribe and that contract is going to go to somebody and my tax money is all getting wasted anyway. Why would I believe in government? And that's the reason that corruption matters in my mind.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do a show about that angle for a while. How do you talk to people about that, Tim? Because they have very valid points.
They have very valid points and it's very frustrating. I remember years ago, a very bright guy was running for city assessor and very liberal, progressive guy. And we were talking about taxes, and the assessor obviously oversees city taxes. And I said, well, as assessor, what are you going to do to bring in more money for the city? Where are you going to find more tax money? And he said, this was back in the days when Willie Brown was mayor. He said, why would I want to bring in more tax money? Willie Brown will just waste it on his cronies. Mm. And when I heard that, it's just like, you know, my heart felt. It's like, come on, if this is what the liberals are saying, we're in serious trouble here. So when people say, when even low-level folks do this, and when politicians condone this, you know, Mayor Ed Lee has said that he abhors this, but obviously there's been patterns from the Willie Brown days when Ed Lee was an employee of Willie Brown's. All the way through, there's been a pattern of, at the very least, sleazy stuff, if not illegal stuff. And when that happens, it's really dangerous, I think, to American democracy.
Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills, an online progressive daily providing original reporting about San Francisco. Today we are talking about the corruption case in San Francisco and also in Sacramento. And the big question is, who has access in Sacramento and City Hall? This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can leave a comment at the show's website. Set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org. Coming up in a half an hour, it is World Have Your Say from the BBC, live from Cologne, Germany, talking about migrants and Germany and attitudes. Stay tuned.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Greg Jobin Leeds about his new book, When We Fight, We Win. He speaks with a number of successful activists, and they share lessons about what works and what hinders transformative social change. That is tomorrow. Friday, we will be discussing coverage of the Super Bowl in San Francisco. We will talk about the attention that it's getting at the national level about the haves and have-nots in San Francisco, about the homeless issue, and then we'll also be talking about money and politics with the Iowa primary this Monday, and then New Hampshire is next Tuesday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you'd like to join today's conversation about corruption and these charges against three former fundraisers for San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee, we'd love to hear from you. What questions does this raise for you in addition to who has access at City Hall? How does this shape public opinion about government? If you work in government, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills, an online progressive daily providing original reporting about San Francisco. And now I would like to welcome Jonah Owen Lamb to the show. Jonah is a reporter with the San Francisco Examiner. He has been covering the Shrimp Boy case and the ongoing scandal, and he's written for the Examiner since 2013. Hi, Jonah. Thanks for coming in.
How are you doing?
Great. Thank you. So in addition to this key question, who has access at City Hall, what other questions does this scandal raise for you?
I mean, I think aside from that, what's interesting to me, since this town and its politics are provincial in a way or small, right? You have the DA who's brought these bribery charges. I mean, you obviously can't accuse him or suppose that he's doing this for political reason, but you have to look at the politics of this. And so even though locally you have what appears to be an activist DA moving to kind of, you know, go after corruption, he's not a friend of Ed Lee or, you know, kind of the ruling cabal. And that's obvious. And, you know, we've reported on that. So has everyone else. So I think it's interesting to note that. And that essentially we're in a one-party town. And that also kind of speaks to how corruption works a little bit. I think that corruption is not, again, there can be overt corruption. There can be, you know, red envelopes in the case of the Shrimp Boy Chow example. But I think a lot of the time it's a kind of longer game. And it's like if you're part of this kind of ecosystem and you work your way up within the political system, you don't necessarily have to call it corruption. But if you saw kind of how it worked, you probably wouldn't be pleased that people were doing long-term favors, quote-unquote, for other people. And then, you know, here's your campaign committee getting some money from these folks. So I think, you know, when you think corruption, you always think Detroit. You think kind of East Coast, old school, dirty, you know, violent-laced corruption. And I think that the way this city works is just, it's a different animal when it comes to how corruption works.
And again, there's no evidence that San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee did anything illegal. We did invite his office to join us. They declined, but we did get a statement from his communications director saying that the mayor and his campaign fully complied with the law and his thousands of campaign contributions were thoroughly vetted. The judge, Judge Breyer, thoroughly vindicated Mayor Lee and said there was no evidence whatsoever of wrongdoing by the mayor. And go
Can
ahead.
I jump in?
Sure.
I mean, I've quoted that, had that same statement in my stories, and you know, it's important to note, yes, the mayor has not been charged with any crime. No wrongdoing has been found to have occurred, but Breyer hasn't vindicated anybody. Breyer's job is not, he's a federal judge in the Shrimp Boy case, his job is not to vindicate someone who was mentioned in the wiretaps, right? So to say that the judge has vindicated Lee, it makes no sense because Lee hasn't been charged. Lee was just named in the wiretap, so it's a little bit playing with the facts there.
And that vindicated word comes directly from the mayor's office.
Right. Yes.
Right. No, that, I think that's right. He hasn't been – I don't think the judge said anything about him one way or the other, except that he hasn't been charged with any wrongdoing.
Or that he might be one of the people who would be besmirched if details in the case were released even though no charges had occurred. So there was a big chunk of the case, the Chow case, where there was a fight with lots of media organizations to get this protective order overturned. The prosecution asked for a protective order. This is the same protective order that's keeping a lid or might keep a lid on the state charges that were filed by George Gascon. So, you know, at the time – The Breyer and others essentially in filings were saying, look, you know, there's all these people that are named, i.e. now we know, you know, Ed Lee. I think Joe Montana was caught up in this large investigation. So it was fair to point out that there was all these names in the investigation. These people hadn't been charged, and to release their names in filings would be an embarrassment, right? It turned out that the three who were being charged were named, and Lee was named eventually anyway, despite this protective order. And some say it was a breach of the protective order when Curtis Briggs and the Chow defense team in August released these documents. So to back up a little bit, the first time the three who were being charged were named in the court documents were in August when he filed this motion for prosecutorial misconduct, right? And within the motion, and maybe this is getting in the weeds, but here we are, he essentially argued, look, there's all these other people who were caught doing bad things, doing bad political things from – or allegedly caught or allegedly, you know, seen, heard on FBI wiretaps, from Zula Jones to Nazli Mohajar to Keith Jackson to, you know, I mean, London Breed was named, Amos Brown, a lot of people in the black leadership of the city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, none of them were charged, and the defense team said, look, this is unfair. Why are you not going after these people when you're going after our guy? And that was part of their – failed defense of Chow.
Right. Tim?
The question I think for us as reporters is, yes, there were people who were named in this who weren't charged. Those of them who are elected officials, the public has a right to know that they were somehow connected to this even if they weren't charged. And that's what's frustrating about this gag order is the fact that somebody wasn't charged in a criminal case can mean a lot of things. It can mean that they did nothing wrong, that there's absolutely nothing there. Or it could mean that the government just decided to go after other people instead. It could be that the case against this one person was too hard to make. The evidence was too thin. It doesn't rise to the standard where a jury would find that person guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
Or the standard that the feds want and the DA doesn't necessarily need.
Right. And those standards. But in the court of political opinion, and that's part of what this is. This is a political case. This is not a bank robbery. This is not, you know, embezzlement. This is a political case. And in a political case, you could certainly argue that we have the right to know what political figures were involved at any level.
And let's talk a little bit about some of the companies that have been named in all of this. So KQED had a really long story. And again, Michael Anthony King, that was the name of the FBI undercover agent. And he, Keith Jackson, started working for King in February 2012. Keith Jackson also works for Lennar, the major developer. They're behind that massive mixed-use redevelopment project that will transform a large tract of land in the Bayview Hunters Point. And Keith Jackson and King, this undercover FBI agent, had a number of discussions about redevelopment projects and investment opportunities. In one recorded conversation, Keith Jackson told the agent he'd been researching, quote, how to make a profit from not-for-profit affordable housing, end quote. So how significant is this? Can you talk about this connection?
I just want to point out, interestingly enough, so just to give a little more of a connection, in the bribery charges against Keith Jackson in the DA case, a Lennar employee, former Lennar employee, is named as one of the straw donors, a guy named Terry Mitchell. He didn't talk to me other than saying, I don't want to talk to you, but, you know, there's that connection again. And then he was also mentioned in the wiretaps hanging out with Keith Jackson. Again, this is all – doesn't mean anything larger is happening, but there is a large transformation of the city's public housing going on right now with a lot of federal dollars. There's this whole attempt to essentially – privatize it, quote unquote, through these nonprofits, and the administration has made this argument that this is essentially the only way to save these decrepit housing projects that the federal government doesn't want to give money to anymore. Others would argue that it's kind of a backdoor giant check being delivered to private entities that, you know, are not going directly to, say, fixing up the Ping Yun in Chinatown or all the other housing projects around town.
Yeah, and that's what Keith Jackson was saying is, gee, is there a way I can make a buck off of this, right? And again, it makes people feel like, gee, can we really trust this money going into public housing? Because – which is desperately needed. I mean, I have been out to public housing projects. It's a tragedy. It's a disaster out there. And this is desperately needed. We desperately need to spend hundreds of millions of dollars repairing public housing, whether it's done through nonprofits, as the mayor is suggesting now, or whether it's done directly through the housing or whatever. We need to spend a lot of money on this. And then you read this and you can imagine your average taxpayer saying, why am I going to – spend tax money on this, because all it's going to do is wind up in Keith Jackson's pocket.
And there was also mentioned in the transcripts to point out, this hasn't really been reported, but a deputy NAACP head, Arnold Townsend, was mentioned as in the Wire transcripts talking about essentially, look, I put a nice face, a community face on backing these developments, and then in the background, I'm just getting money as a consultant. Now, again, that wasn't reported in the initial dump of all this, but that was a pretty juicy nugget, at least revealing kind of how these community leaders, quote unquote, kind of go out and say, you know, hey, we're supporting this project. And in the back, when they're talking to an FBI agent or talking on the phone that's tapped, they're saying, I'm just doing this so I can get my money.
Well, and then, right, and to Tim's point about how this affects the public's opinion of government, I think this is a key quote here from former Human Rights Commissioner employee Zula Jones, a fundraiser for Ed Lee. She's been charged. And this phone call took place on March 1st, 2012, between Zula Jones and the FBI undercover agent. She said, quote, "You pay to play here. We got it. We know this. We are the best at this game, better than New York. We do it a little more sophisticated than New Yorkers. We do it without the mafia," end quote.
Yeah.
So what's the public supposed to think when they read that quote?
That's a beautiful quote. Other than that, I think they're supposed to really wonder, all the money sloshing around this town, especially now, it's got to be, you know, they have to think it's like lining pockets, even if there's no hard proof.
All right. So as reporters, hearing a Human Rights Commission employee tell an undercover FBI agent this, what do you both do? I mean, how do you report on this pay to play?
Well, you have to keep – I mean, you have to – one thing you have to do in the old Watergate adage is you have to follow the money. And you have to look carefully at where campaign money is coming from. And particularly – and the Examiner has been doing a very good job of this lately – particularly then who gets contracts. I mean, the Human Rights Commission sounds like, oh, you know, we just make sure that everything is okay in the city and we watch human rights. Actually, what the Human Rights Commission does is they certify contractors as minority contractors. And the city's bidding process gives extra points to contractors that are owned by minority women or LGBT owners. And so how do you prove that? Well, to prove that you're a certified minority contractor, you go to the Human Rights Commission, and someone like Zula Jones looks at your application and says, yes, actually, you're eligible for 5 extra points in the bidding process. All right. And that's where trouble happens. And that's where – I mean, that's what happened with this company that got this lumber contract. That's where
– Yeah, this is Joshua Sabatini is reporting, my colleague.
Yeah, and you can talk about that, but I mean, this is what happens when you have city contracts going to people who have done favors for politicians.
We actually have a caller on this lumber contract, so let's hear from Frank in San Francisco. Hi, Frank. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Referring to last week's article about that lumber company owner who donated to the Ed Lee campaign and won a city contract, my question is, why aren't all city projects like this one put up for a competitive bid?
They're supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't know if this – I mean, I wasn't a reporter in this case, but I don't believe this wasn't necessarily not a competitive bid. But the point of the article anyway was to show, here's this lumber contractor talking to, you know, Zula Jones, and she's the one who's supposed to certify them as a certified contractor. And then they give some money to the Lee campaign, and lo and behold, they get a project to build ladders for the fire department. That doesn't even – necessarily mean anything wrong was done. They could have been the low bidder.
Right.
But it doesn't, in the context of everything else that's gone gone on, it just really doesn't look very good.
That's the whole thing. It doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. And the all contracts are supposed to be competitively bid, but there's a lot of loopholes. There are what they call sole source contracts, when basically the city will say, well, there's only one person who makes this product, right? Or we just spent, you know, $500 million having IBM set up our computers, and when we need spare parts, we're going to go to IBM.
The recently messed up dispatch system is right. An example of this, the same thing that we're kind of stuck in a corner with the contractor they had bid originally with.
Right. So there are loopholes in this, and then, again, there are some contractors who get extra bonus points on the bid. We don't know what happened with this lumber company.
But this is where the money is, right? You see, the money is these bids, because this is huge public dollars going into the pockets of private entities to do work for the city.
And Jonah, I mean, we're not talking about that much money here, because according to your colleague, Jones and Maher arranged $1,500 in campaign contributions to Ed Lee with an employee of a lumber company that later received that city contract. I mean, the three collectively are charged with $20,000 in bribes.
Yeah, those are different numbers. So
okay, but let's talk about the $1,500
again,
lumber contract.
It's hard to say. I mean, I think what we were doing is we were saying, look, there's these allegations that there's wiretaps the FBI had of these people doing things that look pretty wrong, whether or not they're illegal, they're morally and ethically probably outside the lines. And my colleague just said, like, let's see how many, you know, cases you have of these women speaking to a contractor and then them donating money and then getting, you know, a contract. And again, if you back up a little bit and you look at what happened with the FBI agent Michael King, who played this Georgia developer fellow. I know him as UCE 4773, but anyway, that's not important to anybody but me. This straw donor scheme, right? So you have they're talking about how we get around these rules. So if it's only $1,500 in the case of this lumber company, right? I don't know what happened otherwise. But the DA is alleging that what Keith Jackson does is he gets a bunch of other people to write checks, each $500 apiece, right? This Terry Mitchell fellow, other folks, write $500 checks, and then around the back end, somebody gives $500 back to that person. So it's just like – it's like a cloak to hide where the money is really coming from. And again, Sharman Bach, this is an interesting sidelight, but she's an Alameda County prosecutor who got in some hot water in the case because she was running for DA in 2011, and she was caught on the tapes essentially talking to Leland Yee about how to trade donors. Like, hey, so, you know, I'll give you 10 donors and you give me 10 donors as a way to kind of hide where money – or at least it looked that way – hide where your money is coming from. So I think that's the broader way to look at this. You have to look at the Keith Jackson allegations and then kind of put that on top of how these contracts and things might be going on. Gun. None of this is smoking gun. None of this is proves anything, but it does, I think, reveal a little bit maybe how this stuff works.
Yeah, and you know, the reason we have campaign finance laws, we're not under the United States Constitution allowed to limit campaign spending, which is too bad, in my opinion. But the theory has always been disclosure, right? So even if you can't limit spending, the public should know where all the money's coming from and where it's going to. And that's what's so insidious about this is so much of this is about hiding where money is coming from, right? And that's, you know, it's the money laundering charges are saying the money actually came from Mr. King, the East Coast business person, but it was broken up and it appears to have come from other people. So you don't actually know where the money's coming from. So if, in fact, the Mr. King got some kind of city contract or some favorable zoning or something like that, no one would know that he had put up the $20,000. And that's the insidious thing about it.
Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills. Jonah Owen Lamb is a reporter with the San Francisco Examiner. Today we're talking about corruption in San Francisco and Sacramento. How deep does it go? And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Pierto in Berkeley. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm really appreciative of the coverage that you've done on this case, and I'm wondering if you can expand further on how you see a way of actually restoring government credibility. So my background is that I actually worked on one of the housing projects that was discussed, and I agree with it. It was pretty disastrous. It was Yerba Buena Plaza East in the Western Addition. We got it built, but in the 15 months that it took to get it permitted, it became clear to me that a lot of other projects were getting permitted much faster, and that I once jokingly said to my client, the housing authority, that if they had given me $60,000 in small unmarked bills, I might have gotten it permitted in good time. But I don't want to get into that particular detail unless you want to hear about some direct experience of working with the city. I'm much more interested in the political dimensions of the case and maybe a path towards restoring credibility.
I mean, that's, again, I think what this case has revealed to me is how much kind of political motivation, you know, nothing's going to change, I guess, unless the people in power want to affect change, I guess. There's other ways. There's social movements. I'm not talking about that kind of change. But, like, if the kind of, as we call it in our newsroom, like the city family, right, which is kind of for a while the moderate Ed Lee team, doesn't want something to go down, it's hard for that to happen. Not so much anymore with Peskin in office. But I think it takes local political leaders to put the pressure on things. I mean, I've seen it where if you write a story and there's no political opposition, right, and the story just will not stick because there's no one there to throw it, essentially. And before, say, Peskin came to office, you would write stories and nobody cared. I mean, the DA case, I think, is a prime example. And I guess I'm talking more about kind of media and how this works. But I think in this town, the media and the political establishment play a very close kind of role together, right? The politicians use the media to kind of throw out their ideas. We need that stuff to write about, but we also play our own role. But, you know, before the bribery charges came along, right, before the DA made a giant speech when he was inaugurated that he's going to go after political corruption, right, the coverage of these three and their alleged allegations of bribery was pretty much poo-pooed by the establishment, right? You had the Ed Lee saying this is just ridiculous, and they would go after Trump Boy's lawyers, which was an easy task because there are some less than cogent arguments they've been making. That doesn't mean that the actual wiretaps that they had weren't real and from the FBI. But so nothing's real until all of a sudden the DA decides to, like, say, these are real allegations. This is something real. So you have an independent political office holder, the DA, who isn't beholden to anybody and isn't necessarily making friends, taking this on, right? He's doing other things that I think are also kind of critiquing the establishment. But in this town, you need a kind of – you need to pull. Like, the public defender's office, also elected, is a kind of independent political entity in a way that few other bodies are. And I think, at least from my opinion – and I've not been covering politics in this town as long as Mr. Redman here, but – that's what I've noticed, and I think unless somebody here picks up the mantle or takes one of these issues, it doesn't become an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I almost feel like we need some kind of larger oversight body that's just watching corruption at City Hall. And the DA ought to be doing that, mm-hmm. and maybe is starting, and maybe this will come into a larger thing. You know, the Ethics Commission is supposed to do that, but the Ethics Commission, until recently, we have a new director who I think is going to be more aggressive, but the Ethics Commission has done nothing under the previous director. It was a toothless organization. And now I think we're starting to see enough come out that perhaps some of these folks from the DA to the Ethics Commission will look around and say, you know what, the public is pissed about that. And the public has to be pissed, right? We can't, as members of the San Francisco voting public, we can't sit back and say, oh, everyone's corrupt, it all happens, oh, well, it's nothing, it doesn't matter, oh, it's only $20,000, oh, it's just one contract. We've got to say, and I repeat this over and over again, we have to say, as voters, as members of the public, corruption matters. Mm. Corruption matters a lot.
But I think to go kind of outside of this or beyond this, I mean, if you look at the Mario Woods activists, I mean, they are impacting the way city government is doing its thing. Now, whether or not it's going to be a deep, long impact for change is another thing. But I think in this town anyway, you know, the politicians – They do react to negative coverage. They react to crowds hollering at them at their inauguration speech. So you can see what the relentless pressure of the Mario Woods coalition is doing to the mayor's office, to the police chief. I mean, they are acting. Whether or not, you know, you believe it's, you know, from their heart or not doesn't really matter. I think the point is some dedicated activist showing up and embarrassing people a lot makes them do things in this town.
The DOJ is going to investigate the San Francisco police force over the shooting of Mario Woods.
Review. Let's remember to call it review. I think that there was sorry, this is another matter, but the review is different than actually a civil rights investigation, which would have been more binding and had legal elements of it. The review is essentially a voluntary look at the police department, and the chief asked for this a month ago. So the chief asked for it. The DOJ came in. It'll be good, I'm sure. I'm sure there'll be some deep dive into the department, but there's no court that gets to enforce the findings and make the city do anything when this is done.
Yeah, that's right. It's one of the things that – it's a different topic, but one of the things that the Mario Woods activists have been talking about is there's been no accountability. Mm. Nothing has happened to anyone, the chief, the officers, and that's not going to change with this review.
What is next in this case? We're almost out of time. We don't have time for callers, but David wanted to talk about contracts going to private companies that violate renting laws. We have a couple other emails about these rising housing developments and how these developers are getting big contracts. What's next here?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the question on everyone's mind is what is the DA going to do next? What is the FBI going to do next? Is somebody going to flip and talk? Are they going to continue this investigation aggressively? So that's one of the big questions. And I think, you know, we don't know what's next.
And again, there's a gag order, right?
There's a gag order motion. So their next hearing in court in the state bribery charges, the judge has to rule on that request. So he might not. In the meantime, you have a sentencing for Leland Yee and Jackson coming up around the end of this month. So I think those things are kind of in the background. You don't know how that's going to play into the bribery case. Is Jackson going to flip, spill the beans? I'm sure they want somebody to say something about other people. Now, Zula Jones is the one who has – she was indicted a long time ago, so she might have more of a reason to flip.
Is anybody talking to you two off the record about this?
No comment.
No comment.
All right. Come back next week and give us a report.
All right. Thank you.
Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills, an online progressive daily providing original reporting about San Francisco. And Jonah Owen Lamb is a reporter with the San Francisco Examiner. Thank you both for coming in and thanks for your reporting.
Thanks a bunch.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about today's leading social movements. In the new book, When We Fight, We Win, longtime social activist Greg Jobin Leeds and art collective Ajit Arte capture the stories, tactics, and art of today's most successful activists. They all share lessons about what works and what hinders transformative social change. So, how do we create real and enduring change? And what social change movements inspire you? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.